What the heck is the Benedict option? We'll look at that and more on this edition of Church and State. Welcome to Magnificat Radio. My name is Stephen Cox, your host. This is a show dedicated to all things Catholicism, all things politics, and everything in between. You know, before we get into today's show, again, we'll have on Gabriel Sanchez talking about what the Benedict option is, as well as Tyler Nethercott will have his last word today. I think Tyler's going to be addressing the very strange phenomenon of why so-called conservative Catholics continue to resist or continue to disallow themselves from actually seeing the crisis in the church and what the Pope himself is doing to exacerbate that. But before we get to that, again, I wanted to just remind you, the Magnificat Radio blog is being updated on a daily basis. Do go to that. Follow me on Twitter at Stephen Cox to get all of your daily updates and news stories. We've had a couple big major stories this week. John Kerry, Secretary of State, gave a commencement address to the students at Northeastern University in Boston, saying we're going to live in a borderless society, a borderless world. Kind of was an eyebrow-raising statement. A couple other big stories. You know, go to the blog, check them out. And if you like what you see, like what you read, as well as what you hear, because all the past shows from April have been archived on the website. And this one will be up soon. And share that and tell your friends. And if you can, throw a few bucks in the Magnificat Radio collection plate on the website, because that obviously always helps. This show is done out of a labor of love, but love doesn't pay the bills, okay? So we would appreciate your charity to help this apostolate going, keep going, and we really definitely need that, and we'll be praying for you if you do that. But, you know, up first today, this Never Trump movement, it's kind of in flux. You know, there's some conservatives still resisting, still saying, no way, we might run a third party. There are others who have tempered their criticisms of the Donald and have, I think, come to grips with reality. And then, you know, the numbers are tightening. I mean, this is a revolution, and it is happening, and it is real. And you look at the polls in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio. They're all within the margin of error. And they're seeing through, Hillary Clinton. This spineless creature of Washington who's, you know, in her 70s. They don't want someone named Clinton in the White House anymore. And, you know, I was shocked when I heard Matt Archbold of Creative Minority Report tweet, I just came across this, he tweeted this months ago, I think, that there is no difference between Clinton and Trump, and so therefore he's essentially going to sit out the election. I think this is the height of foolishness. And there are clear differences. I mean, it's so very obvious. Clinton is a pro-globalist. She is a radical feminist. She is pro-United Nations. She is at the service of the Council on Foreign Relations. Whereas Trump is an Americanist. He's pro-America, not pro-European Union. He's not going to be told what to do by these folks who want to, under the guise of spreading liberty, colonize the world with the heresy of Westernism. This heresy that spreads social hedonism, corporate crony capitalism, state secularism. This is the game plan of these folks. They want to make this one world image in the image and likeness of man, this one world government. And Trump is representative of the opposition to that idea, to that diabolical thinking. And I don't know if he knows, maybe he doesn't even know it, but I mean, in many ways, he is the Andrew Jackson figure of our time. I'm not comparing them one to one, but you know, what was Jackson in the 1820s? Founded his own political party. The first non-Virginian to be president, the first of the non-founding generation to be president. He changed the landscape of American politics. And for some strange reason, people today look at Trump and they say, oh, it's dangerous that he's aroused this sort of sentiments that he has, that he's getting people all riled up. He's going to make us into a fascist country. I don't see anything in his record that has any sort of indication of that. Now, when Trump came on the scene first, I think everybody, all my listeners, you should know this and probably agree with me. Clearly, it took a while to be receptive to his ideas. Here's this guy, he's yelling loudly. He's mocking reporters who have cerebral palsy. He's using pretty offensive language. But, you know, so I had all the same concerns you guys did. And that's the unfortunate, people vote their emotions more than logic and rationale and reason. People find him offensive, and so, ooh, I can't vote for him. Or they say, oh, he's got money, he's rich, I'll never vote for him, he doesn't understand me. I guarantee he understands you better than Hillary Clinton does. Because this guy's been in business his whole life. He's dealt with labor unions. He understands what making money is about. And he's sick of seeing people get ripped off. It's his number one thing. If you go back into even to the 80s, in the early 90s, when he was asked, would you ever run for president? He said, if I ever did, it'd be because this country's getting ripped off. And he sees it now, and he understands these corporate elites, these folks like George Will, Mitt Romney, and who they represent, these behind-the-scenes powers. And he's saying, no way. I mean, those folks hate him because of his opposition to their foreign policy. That's it. And he challenges the status quo. He challenges their power. They will be ushered out of the Republican Party if he wins and if he succeeds in his presidency. I don't think you can say right now that the revolution has succeeded. I think there's obviously been a big, you know, spark that's been lit. But someone needs to be that voice going forward. And if Donald Trump is not there for the next 4 years, it's going to, I think, die out. You're not going to see anyone else step up to the plate. There isn't a politician right now who can do that. And this is why Romney's coming out all the time against Donald Trump. The intellectual elites hate him basically because they look down their nose at him. He speaks simple terms. He's not very nuanced. They view him as sort of pedestrian. And that's the same sort of contempt, by the way, that they have for you and I. Ordinary Americans, they look down upon us. We're not smart enough to handle these issues. We don't understand truly what's going on in the Middle East. Well, we do. Of course we do. Now, of course, all the other issues with Trump are there. He's vulgar. Is he a true conservative? Can we trust him on social issues? Well, look. I mean, he's appointed one of his top advisors is a pro-life activist. He said on multiple occasions that he's going to nominate pro-life judges to the Supreme Court. It's funny, you know, I look back and reading that article that was written by Chad Pecknold, he's a professor at Catholic University, Ryan Anderson, Robert George. They said, look, the Republican Party's been a serviceable vehicle for Catholic social principles. They said, hey, it's not been perfect, but we can't vote for Donald Trump. He's unfit for office. He's not a fan of limited government. He's not a true conservative. Oh my gosh. Was George W. Bush a principled conservative? Was Mitt Romney a principled conservative? You know, look, sure. George W. Bush, good on bioethics, fairly socially conservative. Absolutely. No one could deny this. But the one problem that a lot of these letters that are written by these Catholics who resist Trump still and just, you know, view him as somebody who we can just kind of forget about, we'll save, you know, put him to the side, put him on the shelf, and then we'll, you know, advance our cause. This country can only be saved by converting it to the one true Catholic faith, by getting people to go to Mass, by getting them to go to confession, by getting them to be baptized. Okay, you're not going to win it over to so-called, you're not going to make it holy and save it by returning to the founders' ideas, the so-called limited government, classical liberal positions. You can't, I mean, do these people honestly think we're going to come back from where we're at, of 50 years of no-fault divorce, of decades of abortion, of now what, an entire 10, 15, whatever, how many years of states having civil unions for homosexuals, and now we're having transgender rights? You think you're going to come back from that without spiritual combat, without the true Catholic faith? And look, Donald Trump is not going to save this country, as a matter of fact, in regards to all this. But here's where I think people forget and why Trump needs to be appreciated. Because, again, we are living in a global society. You can't even have the chance to fight for social issues in your country if you don't have a country. If you have a borderless world, as John Kerry just talked about the other day, if you have these politicians, these neoconservatives in the Republican Party in power, they're fighting to cede this sovereignty to these global institutions. Now, I think it was Hadley Arks, a professor who's written at thecatholicthing.com, who said, hey, look, Trump is likely to support pro-life nominees. He's probably going to make a good replacement for Antonin Scalia. I don't know why these other folks can't jump on board with that. I think, again, it's this sort of, oh, President Trump would be, you know, he doesn't really understand what he's doing. He's loud, he's brash. People, I think, cannot separate voting for a man who's done these things and said these things versus the principles and things that he represents. I think it's unfortunate because you can separate them. I mean, a lot of these people, these Catholics, these elite Catholics, I mean, if you don't go to their summer seminars, if you didn't graduate from Princeton or Harvard, or if you don't, you know, go to these Acton conferences, these Acton Institute conferences, they don't want anything to do with you. You're not a principled conservative, quote unquote. I mean, again, spiritual warfare must be first and foremost. I mean, you look at what happened in North Carolina. What's going on there? We have a Marxist culture right now that's imposing and imperializing those who are opposed to this LGBT revolution. And, you know, the only way, again, you're going to save it, this country, and fight that is not through, you know, getting just one more principled conservative in office. It's about prayer, sacrifice, fasting, mortification. And, you know, I think there's a lot of folks out there who have said to me, said, hey, look, we're all for that. We got to stand up for North Carolina and all these things. And I don't, personally, why haven't other states done this right now? Imagine if like 10 or 15 other Republican governors just passed laws similar to this. It would have been perfect timing. It would have been perfect. Would have said, look, we're all standing together. But of course, no, the Republican Party is wedded to this Americanist idea that they're weak-kneed. They're not going to do it for us. And so, you know, let's understand, again, that as a lot of folks have told me, hey, I am as much of a culture warrior as anybody else. That's what people say to me. But right now, we're in the throes of a worldwide revolution that's wanting to set up a one-world government. And Trump is talking about opposition to globalism. He's opposed, again, on principle to these sorts of things. He wants to rethink NATO, talk to Putin. Hey, can't we support him because of that? Do you become a liberal? Do you become an Americanist for supporting a politician for those reasons? I don't think you necessarily do. Are you complicit in the liberal American project that we have by casting a vote for someone for those reasons? Because this is the thing a lot of traditional Catholics have problems with. They say, no, we're not going to vote. Trads for Trump. It's a thing out there. Those trads for Trumps, they're just supporting liberalism. And they're just as bad as everybody else. Well, perhaps. But there is a certain temporal, natural order here that needs to be fought for. And I think Trump, to a very large extent, understands it. And so, Catholics out there, I'm asking you to look at the situation we're in right now and ask yourselves, you know, what has the media said about this character? Is it true? Is it not? And I think you'll find that increasingly, what is being said is not true. There is no record of authoritarianism. I don't even know where this is coming from. There is no fascist claim. This is what the media does. These people who control the media, they bring this up every once in a while, throw out the name David Duke, the KKK. Oh, you're associated with these people and your career's over. Literally overnight, these people who control our media. This is how they work. If you toe the line on certain issues, as Trump has said, has done, on foreign policy, they want to throw him out. I mean, remember a couple weeks ago when they compared him to the 1930s and said he's basically Hitler coming back from the dead? Where is this coming from? It makes no sense. But it's how the game has always been played with the media these days. And we know who controls it. We know who controls it. But Trump is not playing their game. And the American people are not either. And that's what he represents. And that's, I think, what he represents. So we'll leave it there for today. We'll be right back after this quick break. We'll have Gabriel Sanchez talking about the Benedict option. Coming back right after this. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to Magnificat Radio. Living our